The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You said you bought it because you believe in speech, free speech. You've had a lot of hassle since you bought it. In retrospect, was it worth buying it?
I mean, it remains to be seen as to whether this was financially smart. Currently, it is not. We just revalued the company at less than half of the acquisition price. My timing is amazing. since I bought it for at least twice as much as it should have been bought for. But some things are priceless. And whether I lose money or not, that is a secondary issue compared to ensuring the strength of democracy. And free speech is the bedrock of a functioning democracy.
Some things are priceless, says Elon Musk. He's lost something like $25 billion following his purchase of Twitter last year. It's fascinating to me just to consider the heart of certain ones. There's not very many of them. Those that would risk fortunes, those that would risk their fame and reputation to make sacrifices. Donald Trump, I think I remember we went through an article a couple years ago, and it was just commenting on how much his estate or his real estate empire was worth following his 4 years in office as president. 4 years, by the way. 4 years in which he didn't take a dime from the American people. He refused to take a salary as president. And then he lost money. He lost money. I think it was $2 billion. Similar to Elon Musk, making sacrifices for the good of others. I mean, really, that's the spirit of godly love. I'm not saying these men have the love of God, but they do love other things besides wealth and fame and fortune. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live stream of this show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. here in the central time zone of the United States. Just go to trumpetdaily.com. You can see it there at the lower third. Trumpetdaily.com takes you to the live stream. Of course, you can go to our websites and also get to the podcasts that are posted after the fact, and you can also have them downloaded to your devices. So just consider the contrast. The Bible tells us to judge by fruits. You've heard me say this so many times. But it also says, Jesus said, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And it's so revealing when you see so many politicians and leaders, when they head off to Washington, D.C. or wherever in the world, and they just line their pockets with treasure. They line their pockets with money. And money, as Paul said in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 10, it's a root of so much evil. Look at how the Biden crime family has been corrupted by money, or the Clinton Foundation, or the Obamas. Just filthy rich, these people that say they speak for the common man. They say they represent the common man. And then the common men show up at a hearing in New York, and these Democrats, these filthy rich Democrats, they basically just dismiss them. Who cares that your son was murdered in New York City? This is all about Donald Trump. It's really sickening to watch. As they line their pockets, and then, of course, they spend your money on all of these fantasy operations, these fantasies. Look at their policy initiatives, what they talk about. I played a little bit of this for you just yesterday on the show. Here's clip two.
1 in every 5 metric tons of carbon dioxide our city emits comes from food. But all food is not created equal. The vast majority of food that is contributing to our emission crisis lies in meat and dairy products. We already know that a plant-powered diet is better for your physical and mental health, and I am living proof of that. But the reality is that thanks to this new inventory, we're finding out it is better for the planet.
And transitioning, you know, this diesel truck that's on its last wheels. I got jokes. And transitioning it to give it 10 more years of its lifespan, transitioning it to being an electric vehicle. And as we were discussing it, because he's talking about not only doing the work of transitioning it, but the folks who are going to actually do the actual work, right, of changing its composition so that it can then be an electric vehicle. Well, we would have all traditionally called that person a mechanic, but now we're calling the person who's doing the EV stuff a technician.
That means the global market is extremely volatile. So what's better for us? The better choice is to move to electrify transportation because it is so much cheaper.
So much cheaper. Yeah. It's so cheap to spend trillions and trillions of taxpayer dollars on these kinds of programs. Converting a diesel truck into an EV or doing away with meat. He says the mayor of New York City, as crime is out of control and people are suffering and businesses are closing down because they won't crack down on the criminals. This is because the criminals, there's more of them in the leadership positions as well. There's criminals all over the place. I had a good laugh yesterday as Chuck Schumer walked into a room and was trying to drum up enthusiasm from the press pool, and they weren't reacting in a very enthusiastic manner. Listen to clip one.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back. Who's happy to be here? Raise your hands. Okay.
Okay, nobody raised their hands. Who is happy to be here? These people think they're right at the center of the universe. They think they're universally loved and appreciated for all of their sacrifices. But look at the bottom line. Who actually makes sacrifices for the good of the nation or for the good of the American people? As I say, it's so revealing when you look at some of the motivations, when you look at some of the bottom lines. Elon Musk losing $25 billion. Donald Trump losing a billion or two? Which one of these communist Democrats on the radical left would sacrifice $25 billion to uphold and to strengthen the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution? Which one of them would do this? Would Obama do that? Would the Biden crime family do that? Listen to what Jim Comer said yesterday about the Biden crime family. It's getting bigger and bigger, at least in terms of what they're finding out about all of these members of the Biden family that have these shady dealings with the communist Chinese. Clip four.
There are thousands of pages of documents relating to financial transactions. And let me be very clear. This isn't just about the president's son or the president's brother. We've identified six new Biden family members involved in shady foreign transactions that we believe were a direct result of influence peddling. That brings the number of Biden family members now to nine that were involved in the Biden family influence peddling. And we still have more family members that we suspect were involved. So this is a family affair. It's very serious. And the President of the United States is going to have a very hard time explaining how so many of his family members have received so much money from our adversaries around the world.
A family affair? They're all on the dole. They're all on the take from the CCP. They're all compromised. They're all traitors. They're treasonous actors running the country. And here, this is what should be the big story. This is what should be playing out. This is what there should be hearings over. As it is, it's just this man and maybe a couple of others commenting on it. On usually Fox or some affiliate of Fox. Nine members of the Biden family being paid by the communist Chinese, as I say, lining their pockets, even as Elon Musk sheds billions, tens of billions, to purchase Twitter, so that he can promote free speech. Of course, this infuriated the radical left because it gave a voice back to the conservative right. All those people that have been blotted out of Twitter. Donald Trump going into office, refusing to take a salary, and actually putting in place policies that helped Americans to prosper, ordinary Americans. Meanwhile, you've got this going on. And you've got the Department of Injustice covering it all up, just like they did the Hunter laptop. Yes, that includes Bill Barr. Covering up the crimes of the Biden crime family, even as they go after the Trump enterprise on a bookkeeping error. And it wasn't even an error. A bookkeeping charge. Now they're doing the same thing to Clarence Thomas. He didn't file his taxes right in 2014, 9 years ago. Let the shoplifters and the looters and the murderers roam free in New York City and get Clarence Thomas. Get the conservative. Certainly get Donald Trump, the bad orange man. You know, you go back to the Biden crime family. He's obviously compromised. How much, forget about the DOJ and Bill Barr and what they've covered up in order for this to happen. How much does China, how much does Xi or Putin have on Biden? I gave you that story last week on the Cathay Bank that has its connection. It's an American company, but it has its connections to China, and they're turning over documents to Comer. China knows. Chairman Xi knows how much money, how many millions and millions of dollars he's given to Biden. So that makes him compromised. You could say the same for Russia. You could say the same for Ukraine. All of the nations around the world going up in flames. And these people raiding the treasury, spending your money, and then telling you they're just a servant of the people. Victor Davis Hanson, he said, 21st century America was on a trajectory of gradual decline until it began to implode. Was it the accelerant, the COVID-19 pandemic and unhinged lockdowns? Was that the accelerant, he says, or was the catalyst, the woke revolution fueled by the 2020 summer of exempted rioting, looting, arson, and violence? Or was it perhaps the deranged fixation on removing Donald Trump from the presidency and destroying the rule of law in the process? Or all that and more? What was it? What was it that brought on this implosion just here in the last 3 years or so? Hanson says, now with the election of Joe Biden, what had been the election, he rigged it, Obama did, and installed Joe Biden. Now with the election of Joe Biden, what had been a fast-track decline has accelerated at such an astonishing rate we can scarcely recognize our country. It's a totally different country than it was just 3.5-4 years ago. The New York Times reporting on all the crime in the city, the crime that Democrats say isn't there. No. New York City, it's one of the safest cities in the country. It's one of the safest big cities in the country. The Times says here nearly a third of all shoplifting arrests in New York City last year involved 327 people, the police said. 327 people. Collectively, they were arrested and rearrested more than 6,000 times. Try to wrap your mind around those figures, those numbers. 327 people in a city of how many millions? They're terrorizing the city because they won't put them in jail. Or at least if they do, they don't stay there. Because, well, Mr. Adams, who's on a plant-based diet, he wants them to roam the streets. So just 300, how many police officers are there in New York City? Surely they outnumber 327 shoplifters. But they go into jail, then they come out, and they shoplift again and again and again and again. So lenient. On actual lawless acts, on criminal behavior. But if you're a conservative and you've made a bookkeeping error or you did one thing wrong on your taxes, you need to go to jail. It says here, the victims are also concentrated. 18 department stores and 7 chain pharmacy locations accounted for 20% of all complaints. I mean, they're going after the same stores pretty much, which is why some of those stores in Portland and in Chicago are shutting down. How can you turn a profit if you just let looters come in and take everything and then they're not prosecuted? It says here, criminal justice reform advocates have said that petty thefts are a crime of necessity, and that many down on their luck New Yorkers are stealing what they need to survive in one of the world's most expensive cities. They actually excuse the behavior. I mean, this is anarchy. And they're out there defending it. Well, they're down on their luck. You can't even get Mayor Lightfoot or the guy that's coming in after her to condemn the violence. The Chicago TV station, as I covered yesterday, I mean, it says that the teens are taking over. Now, don't demonize the teens. Don't dare call it mayhem, says Mayor Lightfoot. Just, you know, we got to create safe spaces for them, whatever that means. Listen to this. This is a victim, a New York resident whose son was a veteran, served in Afghanistan, came back to New York, came back to friendly territory, and was murdered. Clip 9.
Good morning. My name is Madeline Brame. I am the chairwoman of Victims' Rights Reform Council. I'm also the mother of a homicide victim. My son, Sergeant Hassan Korea, Afghanistan War retired veteran, was killed in Harlem in 2018. Hassan was kicked, punched, stomped, and stabbed 9 times by 4 individuals he did not know, nor had he done them any harm. All 4 of these individuals were apprehended and all 4 charged with first-degree gang assault and second-degree murder. This case just resolved this year. So this case drug on through the Manhattan criminal court system for 4.5 years. When Alvin Bragg came into office, he was handed a strong, trial-ready murder case and gang assault case against all 4 of these individuals, where this brutal, savage homicide was captured on video. He was handed a strong, trial-ready case, ready to go to trial. As soon as he took office, the case immediately began to unravel. He dismissed, completely dismissed, gang assault and murder indictments against 2 of the defendants clearly on video participating in the brutal, savage slaughter of my son.
It's just sickening, this system, the mentality. Well, now let's take away the gang assault charges. Let's let 2 of the guys go. I mean, the fact that the investigation took over 4 years when it's on video, I mean, that in itself is ridiculous. But as she said, it's trial ready. It's handed to Bragg just as soon as he comes into office. But he's too busy. He's too busy trying to take down Trump. And then he wants to let the murderers that killed that woman's son, who served his country. Here again. Who are the ones making sacrifices to uphold the Constitution or to serve the country or to help ordinary Americans? And who are the ones that are hurting people? Listen to this man, this Jewish father, again from New York City, describe his son, who was violently beaten as well. Clip 10.
I got to the hospital. It was hard to believe what my son looked like. His face was beaten. His face was sprayed with mace. They punched him. One fella hit him with crutches. In Times Square, broad daylight, all because he's wearing a yarmulke going to a pro-Israel rally. Now, I'm in New York my whole life. I'm 57. Never had problems like this. And it was just very shocking to hear this. I sit in front of the community, 2-year anniversary of the attack rapidly approaching, and the ongoing struggle with D.A. Bragg. This has been going on for 2 years. They have a film of this in black and white from people on the street and Times Square. It's an open and shut case. And D.A. Bragg is just schlepping this case along with no solution, offering deal after deal. One fella, Wasim Awade, was hitting my son with crutch, was offered a sweetheart deal, didn't take it yet. He was let out on probation. As he's getting out of the court, as he's getting out of jail, the friends are dancing with him, on his shoulders. I will do this again. I would said I will do this again. He had no qualms about doing it again, about beating up another Jewish person. And in fact, while he was out on bail, he had an incident with a road rage with an elderly man on the street. Bragg brought him in again, nothing. Just go out and behave yourself. This just emboldened him to act, and he doesn't care. I've been in 3 court hearings, and basically nothing has happened in 3 court hearings here in Lower Manhattan, a couple buildings down.
This is all from the hearing yesterday in New York City somewhere. The congressmen and women making their way up to New York just to make it more convenient for these victims to be able to tell their story. And as I said on yesterday's show, if this can't bring both sides together to denounce what's happening in some of these DA offices and in some of the big cities of the United States, then what can? Listen to these Democrats and their take on the proceedings yesterday, clip 8.
In Lower Manhattan for one reason and one reason only. The chairman is doing the bidding of Donald Trump. Committee Republicans designed this hearing to intimidate and deter the duly elected district attorney of Manhattan from doing the work his constituents elected him to do.
Wow. Instead, it is the GOP leadership in Congress doing what it has done best for the last 6 years, and that is to act as the criminal defense counsel for Donald J. Trump. Well, let me tell you this. Let me tell you this. Let me tell you this. Donald J. Trump.
Gentlemen, what's this been?
And we're not insulting you. Your experiences are devastating. But the problem is that this is a charade to cover up for an abuse of power that they are going around talking incessantly outside of this hearing about Donald Trump.
Can I respond to you, please?
No, not right now, because I only have 20 seconds. I'm sorry. But I do
don't
want to
don't insult my intelligence.
Hang on. The gentleman's time.
I'm not insulting
my intelligence. You're trying to insult me like I'm not aware of what's going on here.
Thank you.
That's why I walked away from the plantation of the Democratic Party.
Some of these people, most of the people, were legitimate victims of crime in New York City. But the idea that on your first day back from this break to have Jim Jordan and congressmen from California and Texas coming here clearly, transparently, to put a dent into Alvin Bragg as he prosecutes Donald Trump.
Well, I don't think it was very effective. I mean, one of the strange things, just there was no photo op for them. So they were in New York, but they could have been in any room anywhere in the country in this tiny federal space. That was strange.
But no, this was all about Trump again and Jim Jordan's addiction, Gene Robinson, to Donald Trump, some sort of show, circus, gesture.
Yeah, it was a travesty, a sham, a circus. And as Mara said, it was not particularly effective because it could have been a basement committee hearing room on Capitol Hill for all the visuals we got from it. It was, it's ridiculous, actually. It's these stunts basically are what this House majority can do.
Right? But also, it's just disgusting to see lawmakers of any party exploiting the grief of cherry-picked, hand-picked individual victims of crime and their family members for their own political purposes. There's something extremely disgusting about that.
Isn't that rich? These people know a little something about cherry-picking certain ones and exploiting their grief. And how revealing. She works, I believe, for the New York Times. The Eugene Robinson, I think he's the Washington Post. And both of them commented on how the hearing was ineffective because, well, it was in kind of a darker, dingier room. The optics weren't so great, so I don't think it was very effective. It wasn't effective because of the optics? Here again, if there's anything these people really specialize in, it's creating the optics to put on a show trial like the January 6th hearing. Here, you just heard two of them. Here, you have actual victims. People whose children were beaten to death. And there they are. The Joe Scarborough guy says, well, they are legitimate victims. But how dare Jim Jordan come back the day after their Easter recess, and this is what they go into first. When Bragg goes after Trump for a bookkeeping mistake, they cheer. They can hardly contain their enthusiasm and excitement because they want to see him go to prison. Clarence Thomas sells an old home that his mother's living in, and he takes some of the proceeds and forgets to put it on, like he's going to risk his distinguished decades-long career on a tax mistake? A mistake on a tax return from 9 years ago. And here again, the media, they hyperventilate. It's so exciting to see a conservative go down. To see someone who's actually made sacrifices, maybe even lost money for the good of the country. Boy, what a system. All of this violence. What did Ezekiel say? Make a chain? I mean, there's just one violent act after another, after another, after another. They get together in New York to talk about it, to debate it. And, well, you see how the communist left reacts. They hate it. They hate it. And then these stores shut down, and CNN, all the rest, they're scratching their heads. Why would they do this? And, of course, they're wanting to inject race into it. Yeah, Walmart's pulling out of Chicago because they have it in for the black community. Look at what's happening in the black community. Look at this montage. Some of this is from the Summer of Love in 2020. Some of it's from just recently in Chicago, in Los Angeles, clip 7.
Every grocery store looks like this. Everything is either on the floor. Look at this. And my hood can't even get no food for my kids. Babies need milk. Can't even get nothing for my kids, bro. But this is what we're fighting for. This is honoring George Floyd. People who already couldn't feed their kids, now they really can't feed their kids. This is not okay for us to have to live like this.
You have these kinds of scenes playing out all over the country. And then the leadership in those same areas, they rush to the defense, not of the victims, just like we saw with the crime hearing yesterday. They rush to the defense of the criminals or Alvin Bragg. He's the victim now because Jim Jordan's going after him. What about the victims that actually lose their children or that are nearly beaten to death? Listen to the mayor and then the mayor-to-be in this clip here, clip 5, as they justify this sort of activity, clip 5.
The mass majority of the young people that came downtown because it was a great weather and an opportunity to enjoy the city. That's absolutely entirely appropriate. There are a few that came with different intentions, and they have and they will be dealt with. But I'm not going to use your language, which I think is wrong, to say that it's mayhem.
What I'm saying is you can't condone the looting that corporations continue to do every single day when they take tax dollars from black, brown, white folks all over the city of Chicago so that they can turn a profit.
So the corporations are the looters. Yep, that's the soon-to-be mayor. And then before that, Mayor Lightfoot, she's there saying, now a few came with bad intentions, but your language is wrong. You used mayhem. How dare you call this mayhem? Most of these teens just came out for a good time. And then this guy adds that, well, and the ones that did commit acts of violence, we need to create more space for them. What did the DC mayor years ago that said that we need to give them space to commit these acts of crime? I think that was back in 2015. Boy, and now you see where we are. All of this so-called criminal justice reform, all the cashless bail, all these things. Just let the criminals roam free, and they are. And the thing that's so revealing about that New York Times article I gave to you is that if you just clamp down on the 327, you eliminate something like 6,000 criminal acts. But they won't leave those 327 in jail. They won't crack down on crime. And so it spreads. And you've got all these repeat offenders. And then the talking heads wonder why the stores are closing in the inner cities. Listen to CNN from yesterday, clip 6.
Walmart has closed 4 out of its 8 stores in Chicago, giving less than a week's notice. Now residents in the communities affected will have to travel farther for pharmacies and for groceries.
The community's very frustrated by this. They're going to have to travel farther to buy fresh groceries, pharmacy services, retail services. And it's a particular burden on elderly citizens and people without cars and reliable public transportation.
Now, the move is a reversal of Walmart's previous commitment to expand in Chicago.
And in 2020, Walmart temporarily closed its stores in Chicago after the protests over George Floyd's murder. And they pledged to expand in Chicago, to invest in it. They said, we believe in Chicago. And then just 3 years later, it's pulling out.
I mean, they're where they have to make money, because they've been losing money in Chicago for years now.
Yes, their annual losses doubled over the past 5 years. They just have not been able to make it work in Chicago.
And they don't respond to voters. They respond to shareholders.
That's the real world. Yeah, they're losing money. So they, in a sense, you could say they've sacrificed for a few years now. I mean, going back to George Floyd, that guy even said there, they closed him down temporarily then. They had made the pledges along the way. Look, we want to help the inner city, but at some point, you got to stop the bleeding. The bottom line, the money. Who's going into it? Just look at looting for one example. Who is running into the store, emptying off the shelves, and lining their pockets? And who's there making sacrifices for the community? Well, they can only make sacrifices for so long before they say, forget it then. We've just got to close it down. And then who suffers? Law-abiding people that have to, as you just heard, they have to travel farther to go get their goods and services. It really is sad to see what's happening to family, to see what's happening to the black community, to see what's happening to all of America. City Journal, speaking of Brandon Johnson, he's the new mayor coming into Chicago. It says here, inheriting a city already in crisis, Johnson plans to soak commuters, businesses, and the ultra-rich in taxes, has claimed that defunding the police is an actual real political goal, and promises to splurge on social spending. All this will make the Windy City situation more dire still. It's hard to fathom a mayor worse than Lightfoot, but they may well have just elected someone even worse. This is what's coming to Chicago. You're seeing what's already there. Says Mayor Johnson is likely to make matters worse. Shortly before the election, Chicago Police Union President John Catanzara warned that a Johnson victory would catalyze another wave of officer resignations. Those in the city's outer reaches, where crime is most severe, will bear the harshest consequences. Chicago's finances will suffer, too, as fewer commuters brave the journey into the city and more businesses decide to decamp entirely. This is Biden's America, or actually we should say this is Obama's America. This is what he wanted. And you know, more and more, you saw it with some of the Jesse Waters clips yesterday, more and more people are looking at Barack Obama and saying, this is really where the implosion began. Victor Davis Hanson talked about the significance of just the last 3 years. But if you go back before that, 2008, it's not, I mean, America certainly was in decline before then. The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy brings that out. It's prophesied, but boy, look at how it just accelerated in 2008 with the vow to fundamentally transform the United States of America. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show with some feedback, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
The Armstrong Institute of Biblical Archaeology, or AIBA, is a non-profit academic and educational institution headquartered in Jerusalem, Israel. AIBA showcases Israel's biblical archaeology and makes it available to the largest audience possible, especially to the people of Israel. The institute is named after Herbert W. Armstrong, who had a long and rich history with Israel and biblical archaeology. The Institute works with many of Israel's most esteemed academic institutions, including Hebrew University and the Israel Antiquities Authority. AIBA features and continues Dr. Elat Mazar's archaeological work and that of her grandfather, Professor Benjamin Mazar. The Institute promotes the Bible as a credible and essential historical resource in Israeli archaeology. It analyzes and explains archaeological excavations and discoveries, past and present, in the context of the Bible. ArmstrongInstitute.org publishes articles, scientific reports, and videos on Israel's biblical archaeology. The Institute produces Let the Stones Speak, a magazine about biblical archaeology. It also organizes private tours of the Ophel and the City of David, as well as public seminars and archaeological exhibits. AIBA sponsors and participates in archaeological excavations in Jerusalem, primarily in the City of David and Ophel. The Institute office is located in an upscale and beautiful Jerusalem suburb near the official residence of Israel's president. Institute staff moved into the office building at the end of August 2022, after 7 weeks of renovations. The building provides residential and office space, an area for small archaeological exhibits, and room for the Mazar's combined libraries. The book collection contains around 4,000 books from the Mazar's and another 4,000 from Hebrew University. This library represents a wealth of crucial historical and scientific knowledge about Jerusalem. AIBA works to let the stones speak, proving the accuracy of the Bible as a historical record. To learn more about the Armstrong Institute of Biblical Archaeology, please visit armstronginstitute.org.
The Trumpet Daily.
There is your latest installment of news of the work, a little bit of a look at the Institute, the Armstrong Institute in Jerusalem, a magnificent facility. And I was speaking to our manager over there, the office manager, Brent Nachtigall, and he was talking about just how much activity has increased just in the past couple of months. Of course, the Institute had its grand opening back in September, and we've been involved in excavations over there with the late Dr. Elat Mazar and other archaeologists as well. And that's been going on since 2006. But we've really seen an uptick in activity just in the past couple of months. So, as I say, a very informative segment there that gives us some insight into God's work and, of course, gives us more that we can be thinking about and praying about. And no matter where you are, just to tie it in with what I've prepared here for the Bible study segment, no matter where you are on earth, if you're supporting God's work, I mean, you're one of a precious few. Jesus referred to the brethren of God as a little flock, just a tiny little flock in a world that's just filled with all kinds of evil. I read through Genesis 6 this morning at Forum for the students, and it says that in the days before the flood, the minds of men, it was just on evil continually, violence, evil and violence. And of course, Jesus said it would be just like that in the last days. And so what a weighty responsibility we have as God's people to serve him and to really pour our hearts into it so that God can multiply the efforts of this great end of the end time work. We have so few resources to work with. We have so few people. And yet what a mighty and wondrous work it is. That's because it's God's work. That's because God is leading the operation, whether it's the work at Jerusalem or whether it's the work here on campus or at Edstone or wherever it is. Notice Exodus 14, verse 5, that says here, this is after the Exodus. It says, "And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people. And they said, 'Why have we done this? And that we have let Israel go from serving us?' And he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them. So Pharaoh, he reconsidered and he unleashed this army of chariots, this army against Israel. In the pagan holidays or God's holy days booklet, it says, while the Israelites were in Egypt, they were Pharaoh's slaves, helpless and powerless under his taskmasters, just as the sinner is in the power of the devil. But when Israel took the blood of the lamb, then God acted, and as a result, Pharaoh released Israel. Mr. Armstrong says, when we accept Christ's blood, God acts and the devil must release us. One of the last booklets that Herbert Armstrong wrote was titled A World Held Captive, and it had a picture of the earth on the cover, and it was behind bars. He called the devil a great kidnapper, but Jesus paid the ransom. And if we accept that blood in faith, in repentance and faith, then God acts, and the devil has to release us. And after that, what happens? Well, we go forward with Christ, just like the Israelites were to follow that pillar cloud in the wilderness. Just go forward, wherever it goes. If it takes a left, if it takes a right, you just follow along. In the New Testament, of course, it says, follow in the steps of Jesus Christ. Verse 15, further down, it says, and the Eternal said unto Moses, wherefore cry you unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward, but lift you up your rod, and stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. They were trapped. They were surrounded by mountains, by this large body of water, by the Egyptian army. And God said to Moses, look, just go face the water and part the sea. I'll perform a mighty miracle. And they can actually, millions of people and all these flocks of sheep and all kinds of animals together with them. I mean, a huge, major scale operation here. A nation of people walking across the Red Sea on dry land. That's quite a miraculous turn of events. God said he would deliver them. God had worked miraculously to set them free from Egypt. And he'll continue to work miracles to keep us out of Egypt if we look to him, if we trust him. Verse 19, it says, and the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them, And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all the night. Israel just had to look to God. There's obviously a powerful lesson in all of this for us. As we look to God for deliverance, as we look to God's lead for where to go, to know which way to go. It talks about us being children of light in 1 John 1 and how that we need that light to stay on the right path. Hebrews 12, notice this. Hebrews 12 and verse 1, it says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." We're in a race. In a lot of ways, it's an endurance race. And we have to run. Spiritually speaking, we've got to use legs and feet to take off and to sprint for God, to remove all the weights that slow us down. That's what Paul likens sin to. He likens sin to ankle weights that prevent you from going forward with some pace, with speed. Think about the example of David and Goliath. That's in 1 Samuel 17. You can look at it later. But he came out to the battle scene, and of course his brothers had disdain for little David because he didn't belong there. Of course, the whole Israelite army was terrified of this giant. And David's brothers ridiculed him as some lowly shepherd. "What are you out here for? You should be with the sheep. You're a nobody." And David surveyed the scene and saw that no one would stand up and fight Goliath. Saul wanted to put all of this heavy armor on him. And David said, I can't take on this giant with all this. It just slows me down. So he took it off. He wanted to be able to run. And he literally did run out to the battle. It says that in 1 Samuel 17. He ran. That's the way God wants us to be in our spiritual fight. To really, as so many of us heard all through the days of unleavened bread, to really be quick to respond to God's correction. To really be quick to replace the leaven of sin with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. To actually go to work on removing sin. The Bible says, work out your own salvation. I mean, we have to work it out. We have to put in some effort. It's not a human effort alone, of course, but we have to work jointly with God and Jesus Christ. And they'll lead us where we need to go. Notice verse 2. It says, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Here is pictured the living Jesus Christ, the resurrected Jesus Christ. Jesus lives. He lives. He's our high priest and advocate. He's our pace setter. He's our pillar cloud. He's our intercessor. He's our head and husband. And we follow in his steps, looking to Jesus Christ. Christ and his sacrifice, I mean, that's reconciled us to the Father above. And then we have that perfect example in the way Jesus Christ led his life while in the flesh. And of course, we have the powerful, resurrected, all-powerful being that is Jesus Christ today, there at the right hand of God, pleading our case, help, bringing insights into the throne room of God about you and me, because he knows us. He knows what it's like to live in the flesh and to be subject to those many pulls coming from the devil and from society and even self. We really are here to put away sin and to do it with the help and the power that God and Jesus Christ make available through the Holy Spirit. It says in the Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days Witch booklet, "Christ shall fight for us. We cannot conquer Satan and sin, but he can. It is the risen Christ, our high priest, who will cleanse us, sanctify us, deliver us, who said he would never leave us nor forsake us. See, the problem with man down through the ages, the problem with man, even in the eras of God's church, so many of them, is that they've left God. But God says, I'll never leave you. I'll always be there. God brings that consistency to his relationship with you and me. He brings it every single day. But it's so easy for us to grow complacent and to drift away from God, as so many of our beloved brethren have done here in this last era of God's church, the era just before the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, and all of these people of God, these children of God, falling away from God. Habakkuk 2 and verse 2, it says, and the Eternal answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain upon tables, that he may run that reads it. Write this down, make it plain, and make it impact others in a way that they'll take it and run with it. See, God always wants us to act on this knowledge. Knowledge alone is not enough to save any of us. We've got to act on it with God's help and power. In the Habakkuk booklet, you can get to any of these booklets through our literature request line, 1-866-930-3024. Just call our operators today and request these free booklets. Habakkuk says, God commands us, this is my father writing, God commands us to make the vision plain, and we are, it says. People can now read it and run. They can become urgent in this last hour. It's a time not to walk, but run spiritually. If ever there was a time to run, it is now. See, now is the time to run. Now is the time to pick up the pace. Now is the time to, as Herbert Armstrong used to say, sprint to the finish line. We're in the gun lap, he said. Verse 3, it says, for the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. God says, it's coming. Look, don't be skeptical. Don't scoff like so many are doing in the last days. The plan of God, it's running right on time. But some people, humanly, you see, you can get discouraged. You can get older, and you can think that, well, where my Lord delays his coming. A lot of people have drifted away from God with that very sentiment. Well, I guess it's not going to happen. Or if it happens, it's going to be so far into the future. I mean, why continue? They grow weary in well-doing, as Paul said. They give up. They quit. At the very time, God says, now run with it. Really run. Verse 4 says, behold, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him, but the just one shall live by his faith. Two individuals spoken of in this verse, one who's leading a great rebellion, and another one, the just one, who's living by faith, who's walking by faith, who's running by faith. We've got to declare this message. We've got to declare that sacrifice of Christ, as Isaiah 53 says, and we've got to make this message so clear, so plain, that people will receive it and run with it. Notice Isaiah 52 and verse 7 here in conclusion. It says, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that brings good tidings. You see, God draws attention to feet over and again in the Bible, because he loves it when his family, his children, he loves it when they use those feet to run with this message, to run with God's truth, figuratively speaking. I mean, to take it and go, to take it and act on this precious, precious truth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again. We will see you again tomorrow.